I'm a Puerto Rican kid that grew up in the Bronx, New York, and I found endurance sports in my late 20s, and I had family members say to me, "We don't do that kind of stuff." And I was like, "Who's this we? I'm doing it." And then eventually I started my own business doing it, and I was like, "There's going to be another kid like me in the Bronx who is looking for something to get himself involved in or herself involved in." And these sports have given me so much, right?
Welcome to another episode of Daring Dreams, Heart and Strategy in Small Business Marketing. Today, we're diving into the world of entrepreneurship, endurance, and making marketing pivots with someone who knows all about going the distance, Jason Bahamundi. Jason is the founder of Run Try Bike, a digital media company dedicated to providing news, advice, and inspiration for endurance athletes. Run Try Bike is on its fourth year in business, and Jason has learned firsthand what it takes to adapt, to pivot, and to grow a niche brand. Plus, he's got 25 years of sales and marketing experience, so this episode is sure to be an educational sprint. See what I did there? Okay, welcome to the show, Jason.
Thanks for having me on. Every day is a new lesson that we learn in the world of entrepreneurialism, for sure.
You are telling me. So why don't we start from the beginning? Why don't you tell us about Run Try Bike and how it came to be? Because I absolutely love, and so does our listeners, a really good entrepreneurial story.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're born out of the pandemic. It was October 2020. I was working for a company called Travel Host. And as you can imagine, with the word travel in your name, during a pandemic, it's not really good for business. We had great corporate offices, floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking a lake, the way corporate America looks in Hollywood, right? That's what we had. Pandemic hits. My mentor and the owner of Travel Host decides to give it a go, but he's got to get rid of basically all of the staff except for a couple of people, including myself. We move from these palatial offices to what amounts to the basement of the Mexican Chamber of Commerce in Irving, Texas. All of these things are happening around us, you know, government entity conversations and everything. And there's just the three of us trying to figure out how to keep his company afloat. And then one day he gets a phone call and he hands me the phone and he says, "I think it's for you." It turned out to be that the widow of the owner of Texas Runner and Triathlete magazine was looking to sell the business. Her husband had recently passed and she was like, "I got to get rid of this. I don't know anything about it." And I said to her, "Well, what are you selling?" And we went back and forth for a couple of negotiations. The offer and the assets in the offer were nowhere near what I valued them at. And we got off the phone very politely, and I looked at my mentor and I said to him, "I don't need to have purchased that company. I can start this all on my own." It was as if lightning struck me. Having been an athlete in the endurance sports space at that time for 12 or 13 years, I knew the ins and outs of racing triathlon and ultras, and I had been telling my story and helping others tell their stories, and I just thought, let's go for it. And I reached out to a few people, got their thoughts and ideas, and just started putting pen to paper. My background, as you mentioned, was in sales and marketing, so I knew how to pick up the phone and call potential advertisers. I worked in putting together magazines, so I knew that part of it all. I just put the two passions together, right? Media, sales and marketing, and endurance sports, and went to work literally like in that moment. It was crazy. And to think back on it, how fast it turned around, because as of January of 2021, the IRS here in the United States recognized us as a business, tax ID numbers, and started taking revenue in, started putting out content. And for the last four, now going into our fifth year, we've been telling stories of everyday athletes. I think the last count, which is going to be dated at this point, was over 400 stories of different athletes doing different things in the world of endurance sports, inspiring and motivating people to chase the dreams and their goals in these sports. But really, it's about chasing your dreams and your goals outside of these sports. Start that business, get that blog going, you know, write the poem, learn how to play the piano, whatever it is. Stop delaying it and start chasing it.
Absolutely. So do you find that because you were like, you had that athletic background in doing stuff that like takes a lot of work, I guess, in terms of training, and do you think that that actually was beneficial to being like, yeah, I'm going to start this business? Or do you, like, what was the parallel?
100%. I think the reality for me that gave me a leg up, shall we say, is not only being an endurance sports athlete where we're training for an event that might be a year away. There's not an instant gratification scenario, right? It's not like I put on a pair of running shoes and the next day I'm running a marathon or a 100-mile event. So there's that component to it. And building a business doesn't happen overnight, despite what all the people on LinkedIn might tell you that, yes, trust me, I've been yelling this from the top of the mountains for as long as I can remember. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a lot of hard work. And to your point, I have that added benefit of being an endurance sports athlete that give me that mindset. But I would also say this, working in sales is also an opportunity to learn that one call closes happen so infrequently, and you're constantly following up, making a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth call, sending that 38th email, doing whatever you can to break through all of the other noise. And so when you combine those two scenarios of learning how to be patient, it allowed me to get into the business that we're in today and not feel like we're a failure because we didn't break the, you know, the seven-figure revenue number on day two.
Yeah. I think that's actually probably the first time that that's come up, but it's actually so true about patience, right? Like, I find that every client I work with, like, there's not a lot of patience. There's not a lot of, let's just like plant the seeds and see, watch it grow at a pace in which that makes sense, right? So I love that you mentioned that. And that's a really hard thing. So now that you've probably got some skin in the game with this one, because you own this one yourself. Is it a solopreneur, like you're the sole owner?
No, I have two other partners in the business with me. My wife is a partner, and we brought a third partner in almost 2 years ago at this point.
I just want my audience to really be clear on your business and what you offer. So can you just really quick let them know exactly what you do? I get it, but I want to make sure that everybody else understands.
So the CBC in Canada is a media company, and they have television stations, they probably own radio stations, they own newspapers and things of the like, and we're the same exact thing. We're not covering national stories, we're not covering trade wars, shall we say, at this point right now. What we do is we cover stories of everyday athletes, and we tell inspiring and motivating stories from that perspective. And we distribute them through a number of different channels. So we have our website. We also have a newsletter. We're on every major social media platform out there. We also have a podcast network of 9 different shows under the umbrella of the Everyday Athlete Podcast Network. So people can find us there as well. So wherever you're getting content, if you look for us and you look for everyday athlete information, you will find stories of the athletes that we're telling. And so that's our business model, in a sense, is what we do. And then how we make revenue is we sell advertising. So any company who wants to connect their brand to our stories and our ethos and our vision and mission, we are happy to have conversations and figure out best ways to promote your product or service to our audience.
And is your audience primarily in LA, or is it across the US or international?
We are an international company now. We have some media partners or marketing partners in Canada, and two of our shows, Food Fight Friday at the Aid Station, one of our hosts is based out of Crow's Nest Pass in Alberta. Our Running Tales show is based out of the UK, but we have audience in Australia, New Zealand, Europe outside of the UK, Latin America, but predominantly probably 70-75% US-based audience.
And what is the mission or vision for this business for you?
We're the premier voice of the everyday athlete, and our goal is to prove that there is a spot at the starting line for everybody and every body. Right, wrong, or indifferent, endurance sports tends to have gatekeeping. In other words, somebody will tell somebody else that you're not a runner unless you do X. You're not a triathlete unless you do Y. And we're here to tell you that if you run, you're a runner. It doesn't matter if it's a 5K or 100 miles. It doesn't, if you participate in a triathlon, you are a triathlete. Doesn't matter if you do sprint or Ironman distances. We want you to get out there, push yourself, test yourself, figure out what your limits are, and then take the lessons that you've learned from training and racing and apply them to life, like I said earlier.
Actually, I got to tell you this story, Jason. So in 2023, I lost 45 pounds and I hiked the Inca Trail in Peru. And so I'm a hiker and I love the endurance sports and I love the challenging, like the physical, like when you have to prepare for a long time for something, that really does get me going. I'm preparing for another big hike, which I'll be taking in September in Nova Scotia this year. But the thing that I learned as I was training for that hike was I can do hard things. Like I documented it. And so if anybody watched me on Instagram at that time, I was huffing and puffing. And then it just hit me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can literally do anything. Like if I can do this with the body that I started with and then do the hike and be leading the pack on the hike, I can literally do anything. So I 100% believe in your mission. I think once people can turn that switch on, they're like, there's no stopping them.
I appreciate the fact that you talked about being out there documenting it and huffing and puffing, because that is a vulnerable moment, right? Showing the public who you are, the struggles that you're going through, that it's not easy. That is a turning point in which you can then say, I can start this business. I've done that. I can do this thing. I can start my podcast. I can do, because I've already done that. I think what happens is we get so protective of ourselves that we don't want to, we're worried about criticism coming in. So we don't show our vulnerability. We don't let people in. But the reality is when you let people in, you find more support than you do haters. And once you have that support, you start to build on that. You start to grow and you start to realize this is a mantra we use at our company often. Failure isn't terminal. It's the building block to success. So go out and try something. If it works, awesome. Learn from it. If it doesn't work, awesome. Learn from it and do it better the next time.
Like I also have this real long history with fear of failure. In fact, I start a lot of the workshops that I do with I'm recovering from FOF, which is fear of failure. And so I love that I'm starting to grasp that myself. And I'm 47 years old, but that's a hard lesson for me to be like, it's okay. It's okay not to be the best or not to be as successful in something as I want it to be. And I think that that's also entrepreneurship. Not everything's a win.
But everything is a lesson.
So tell me, you had mentioned to me before we started chatting today that you had some pivots and you had to adapt and you had some changes over the 4 years. Tell me about maybe the biggest pivot that you had to make and why you had to do it.
We were an actual physical print magazine when we started. We were literally printing a magazine. I have a background having worked for the Dallas Morning News and for Travel Host that I mentioned earlier. So my background is in what we'd call old media, right? Old school media. And we started printing a magazine and we did that for almost the first two full years of our existence. Most people go, printing must be so expensive. The reality is printing was cheap in comparison to the shipping of the magazine. The idea was we were going to sell subscriptions, and that would be a revenue stream for us. Selling print magazines back then wasn't really easy. It wasn't all that well received for the most part. We also weren't distributing to your pharmacy, and so people couldn't just pick it off the shelf when they were picking up whatever they were getting at the pharmacy either. And so we had to sell subscriptions. And after about 2 years, the cost of shipping that magazine all across the United States became so prohibitive. And I remember thinking to myself, what are our advertisers going to think if we go from a print magazine that they have bought into, that I've sold them on, to now a digital only magazine, right? How are they going to respond? And so I was nervous. But in order for the company to be here in 2025, we had to make that change, had to make that pivot. Otherwise, we would have gone out of business. And I say that without any doubt. And I reached out to our advertisers, and not a single one of them was upset at the idea. They welcomed it. They were like, oh, so then we can do X or Y or Z instead of A, B, or C, right? So they could implement video into the digital magazine that we couldn't do in a print magazine, right? They had opportunities to extend their brand beyond just the ink on paper platform that we had. That was a big pivot. But once we made that pivot, we were able to then grow the business in a lot of other ways because of the money we were now saving on shipping of that magazine all over the place. It was a blessing in disguise for our business bottom line, as well as the expansion of the distribution of our stories through different platforms.
So I want to kind of explain to the audience, and of course, some of you already know, but one of the ways that I talk about in terms of being able to stand out and differentiating your brand is, of course, going niche, niching down. And so this is super niche. So can you tell me from your experience, like, how do you market a niche brand like that? Like, what is your kind of go-to marketing strategies in terms of, like, yeah, basically, what's your go-to for marketing niche?
I will tell every entrepreneur or entrepreneur-to-be in your audience, go get Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why. That has become my Bible, for lack of a better phrase, in the business world, because he talks about people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And we developed our why, like I said earlier, which was to prove that there was a spot at the starting line for everybody and every body. And then we adopted the tagline, the premier voice of the everyday athlete, to coincide with that thinking. And then, honestly, Haley, just get bored with saying it. Like, we say it so many times that we get bored of hearing ourselves say it, but it resonates with people. Once you start hearing it coming back to you, that's when you know you've hit something good, right? So today we get direct messages from people in our audience. We get brands that are saying, hey, how do we become a part of the everyday athlete community? We get people thanking us for putting together something that is for everybody and everybody. They're mirroring it back to us. And it just starts with getting bored with your own self, in all honesty, right? It's the wash, rinse, repeat. You don't have to keep reinventing the wheel, but what you do have to do is keep talking about yourself and using the same verbiage in a way, right? Come up with different variations of the same phrasing. And then when you hear it coming back at you, you've got a home run. Now you've got people listening to you. They're part of your brand. They're part of your product and service. They're part of your community, and they want to help you out.
That actually was the best advice that I was given very early in my marketing career, was exactly that. If you are not bored of what you're saying, you are doing it wrong. So many small businesses make that mistake. They're like kind of all over the place in terms of that didn't stick, this will stick, that didn't stick, this will stick. And it's like, you gotta let something stick.
But you can't be all things to all people. We sell advertising, and I've been selling advertising for 30 years now. When a new client or a prospect, I start talking to them, and I ask them who their target audience is, and they say, everybody wants my product or service. I ask them, how many commas are in your budget? And they're like, what do you mean? I go, well, the way you talk to an 18 to 24-year-old is different than the way you talk to a 65-year-old. The way you talk to a person with a PhD is different than the way you talk to somebody with a high school diploma. The way you talk to a person who makes $200,000 is different than the way you talk to somebody who makes $25,000, right? And if everybody wants your product, you have to have messaging for all of these people. And now all of a sudden, you're spending money hand over fist. So to your point, niche down as much as possible and then amplify your voice, because you're just saying the same thing over and over again to that same exact person over and over again. And it sticks and it gets much easier. And you can watch your business grow all along the way because you boiled it down to something that was easy to talk to. That persona, define the target market, create a persona, and then just talk to that persona every single time.
Here's a public service announcement. If you would like help with your persona, I have the buyer persona course. Go check it out on my website.
I was not paid for that lead.
Yeah, that was not planned, but it's so true. I tell my clients, I work one-on-one with some clients, and I won't work one-on-one with them if they won't actually build a buyer persona. If they won't do the research and build the persona, then the marketing won't be effective. And I don't want to do marketing that's not effective.
Everybody wants their business to be successful. We want to make enough money that we are bank account stable and time wealthy, as opposed to being bank account wealthy and time poor. Meaning, I want to be able to go do things outside of running my business, right? And so we want to work with companies who want to work with us, not companies who want to just lease our audience, for lack of a better phrase. We want to work with companies who buy into our vision and mission because they have their own vision and mission that matches ours. They've defined their target audience. They've defined their persona, because now our jobs are easier. If they're all over the place like we were, and no matter what amount of money they pay us, we're going to be frustrated with them, and they're going to be frustrated with us, because nothing's going to work. And they're going to change their messaging, and it's going to be like, look, we just put in all these hours to create ad copy and imagery and videos and conversations, and now you want to do something different because you didn't think it stuck the first time. And that gets really, really difficult to do. And as a young entrepreneur, as a young business, let's say, you want sales, you want revenue. And so you may take a deal, and within days, weeks, months, you realize this is bad. And you, as the owner of the business, can fire a client. Like, that's okay to do, you know? Give yourself the freedom to say, look, this isn't working for us. I know it's not working for you either. Let's just part ways. They will have more respect for you if you do that than trying to just constantly chase the goal that they keep moving on and cashing their check. Because eventually they're going to go, this isn't working, and I've wasted all this time and energy and money. And they're going to not give you the testimonial you're looking for.
I love purpose-driven businesses. I love people who start with why. Can you tell us the story of why you care about everybody? And
sure. Simply put, if I were going to boil it down, I'm a Puerto Rican kid that grew up in the Bronx, New York, and I found endurance sports in my late 20s, and I had family members say to me, we don't do that kind of stuff. And I was like, who's this we? I'm doing it. And then eventually I started my own business doing it, and I was like, there's going to be another kid like me in the Bronx who is looking for something to get himself involved in or herself involved in. And these sports have given me so much, right? Yes, crossing finish lines and getting medals and all of that stuff is great. But the lessons that I've learned along the way and the friendships that I have been able to obtain along the way far outstrip any of the finish lines, right? And I just think that people really should be a part of this. And so as we got started, I remember thinking to myself and hearing those conversations where endurance sports tends to put up a lot of gatekeeping. And before a lot of this movement was happening, just about every picture you saw was of somebody who was 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", you know, 150, 160 pounds, could run a marathon in 2.5 hours, could run a mile in 4.5 minutes. And I was like, I'm 5'6" at best. Like, I'm not running a 6-minute mile or a 4-minute mile, closer to 8 to 9 minutes, but I'm getting to the finish line. I'm still covering 26.2 miles. And there have to be other people out there who might be timid to try this stuff. And I want to help them. I remember being interviewed on another podcast about a year ago, and they asked the same question. People will say, well, if I can help one person, I've done enough. And in the middle of saying something like that, I said during this podcast, I go, pardon me, but that's BS. If I can help a million people, I'll be happy. Like, I don't want to stop at one person. I want to be able to help, you know, a million people, millions of people recognize that they can do more than they think that they can do. And again, this is not just in endurance sports. This is in life.
I love the way you think. It's very similar to the way I think. I love it. Okay, so tell me, what are the biggest lessons that you've learned as an entrepreneur?
The biggest one is you got to take chances. You really have to take chances on the thing that you believe is right. Look, we live in a world where copy paste is everywhere. You know, I read this article late last year in 2024 that said the top 10 movies are da 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 da. And it said a year ago, at the end of 2023, the top 10 movies were da 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 da. And seven or eight of the same titles, even like part two, right? How awful is this? We are not using our brain. We're not being creative. We're just chasing the almighty dollar in that scenario to literally copy paste this action hero movie into the same action hero movie with part two. That's boring to me. Like, honestly, that is boring. Take a chance. Do something different than what others are doing, and find your audience and nurture your audience and grow your audience, as opposed to doing what the next person just did. I will challenge you to do this, Haley, and I'll challenge your audience. Next time you're literally scrolling on the phone, just look at how many posts are exactly the same and how bored you get with it before you know it. Go on LinkedIn. And I love to pick on LinkedIn because it is a lot of the same copy paste. When we see 7 steps to your first $1 million, 7 steps to your first 500 clients. And it's like, If you all have the same seven steps, why don't we all have millions of dollars? Why don't we all have 500, you know, clients? Like, but we don't, because it's not the same. And clients are bored of reading that same exact thing, that they don't know who's different. Nobody stands out anymore. So I challenge you, take a risk, stand out, be different.
So what have you guys done that you would say was kind of the riskiest, biggest chance for this particular business?
Starting our Everyday Athlete Podcast Network. If we rewind, I'd go back to the very beginning when we decided that while the stories would be easier to get from people that were finishing, you know, top three at a particular marathon or a particular triathlon, because those athletes are looking for endorsements and they're happy to chat and share that information, we went the other way. I wanted to talk to the person who came in dead last. But that conversation was really hard to get because that person wouldn't want to share their story because of embarrassment of being in last place. So getting those stories initially was really difficult. Building up the trust that people could say to themselves, I trust Jason and Lori and Ohm to tell my story on their platform. And that was, you know, at the beginning. And then after a couple of years, when we launched the Everyday Athlete Podcast Network, it became a scenario in which we wanted to do our podcast our way. We didn't want to do it any other way. And so, you know, we have one show that's 15 minutes long that if you listen to it, it's probably 70% laughter. Like, I don't even know how we get words out half the time.
I love that. That's a good one. People need laughter in their life.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We have other shows that are Q&A like this, and they're great, and they bring people out, you know, and they get information out. But then we have another show called Fiery Embers, which is about 30 minutes, and it's ridiculous questions. You know, do you think you can run faster than a warthog? And just stuff like that. Because one of the things is, right, you have a podcast, Haley, but you're not just a podcaster. Right? You have other facets of your life that are just as interesting as being a podcast host. We all do. And so we want to bring that out, but it was difficult at first. And sometimes it's still difficult today for people to understand when they go to the Everyday Athlete Podcast Network, it's not going to just be Q&As. They're going to get hit with a conversation about warthogs. They're going to get hit with a conversation about would you eat chocolate crickets? Things like that. And they, you know, and they start to tie the dots together and seeing like, oh, these guys are having fun. and yes, we are. We're having fun. We always say like, we're not going to win Pulitzer Prizes, right? Our in-depth journalistic credentials don't exist. Like, we just want to have fun and smile and laugh. And we even do that during our Q&As, right? So I would say those two would be the things that have been the hardest for us to deal with over the course of our 4+ years in business.
Yeah, it is hard to step outside the box sometimes, but when you know it's right, you know it's right. And I think that people just have to trust that little voice that's like, just do it. I've got a new podcast coming out that's just going to be me, and it's going to be called Unfiltered and On Purpose. And it's literally going to be just my thoughts on what's going on in the entrepreneurial world. So I'm really excited about it, but also I'm nervous about it because some things people aren't going to like, right?
The number of people that don't like it will also be replaced by the people who do like it, right? We don't live in a zero-sum game world where everybody likes something or everybody doesn't like something. And these are conversations we have a lot too, which is you're going to make people angry one way or the other. So do it your way. Right. If you're trying to write a story for an audience, there's going to be a portion of the audience that isn't going to like it. You're not writing for the thing that inspires you and brings you happiness and allows your words to tell the story the way you want to, because you're trying to write for somebody else. And honestly, that's a waste of time. Do the thing that feels right. Do the thing that makes you happy and makes you smile, because that will resonate with your people. Again, I've been in sales for 30 years. I've taken the courses, I've been part of these mastermind groups and all of these things, and they're always like, ask these types of questions and do these types of things, and it becomes very robotic. But when I'm in a sales call, I want to know what my client's personality is. I want to know what makes them tick. I want to know what makes them smile. I want to know how they have fun. And the reason why I want to know that stuff is so that when something pops up on my feed or I get a newsletter article about it that fits them, I could send them something that's not salesy. hey, Haley, I saw this article about hiking on the PCT. You mentioned that you were a hiker when we talked in the podcast. I hope you enjoy this article. I hope life is well. Let me know how I can help you. Done, right? That's connection. And they'll remember that the next time they need something. And they're like, oh, Jason can help me with X because he has done A, B, and C. And I think if we can start looking at what we really enjoy doing, we will bring more people in than we push people away.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Last year, I was feeling kind of uninspired, I guess. And so I was like, I need somebody to tell me what to do. Even though I literally tell people what to do for a living, that's what I do in this area. And so I hired this company to help me. And then we decided we were gonna do some ads and they were teaching me how to do sales. And I'm a marketer. So I've never done a sales call ever. So I just market and then people think they want to work with me. And then I talk to them and that's the way it is. And so I was like, no, I'm going to try this new thing. It was the worst experience. I had a 16-page script and I had like, if they say this, say this. And like, there was like 30 training videos on how to like, and so I followed it a couple times and then I was like, I just like wasted all the money, threw it all away. I'm like, I'm never doing this again because I'm a mark. Like, that's just not my thing. I'm not a salesperson. I'm not going to like outbound sales or, you know, I guess it was inbound because they had filled in a form, but yeah, it was not me and it did not work.
When it's all said and done, right? People want to do business with people. And if you're robotic in your responses and you're robotic in how you engage them in conversation, it's no longer people doing business with people. It feels like you're talking to a chatbot on a website. And we all get frustrated with that chatbot on the website because it never answers our questions properly. How many times have you yelled at Siri, like, that's not what I wanted? That would be the same thing if we answered questions robotically because, oh, wait a minute. You answered this. I got to flip to page 12 of my sales script and find the answer that matches that. Like, that is unnatural. It's not fun for you or for the client.
Yeah. And I also think as the founder of the business, that's just even worse, right? Because you just lose all credibility because you're not actually talking from your intellect or your heart. You're just following something. As the founder of a business, I just think it's... I can't even believe I went down that path, but I got sold on. People love selling to me because I'm not as easy now. So don't try to sell to me, everybody. But like, I really do. Like, I'm a yes person. Like, do you want to go learn to salsa dance? Yes. Do you want to go hike a 5-day hike and, you know, go to the bathroom in a hole? Yes. I'm a yes person. And so when people call me, they're like, oh, I got her. And anyways, they did. It wasn't the best. But I do want to bring you back to, you were talking about LinkedIn. And I want to bring you back to that and get your thoughts on this. So one of the things on LinkedIn that drives me crazy is the salespeople who reach out assuming that I want them to get me a bunch of leads that I'm going to have sales calls with, right? I'm like, I don't want any leads. They're like, we can get you 30 sales calls in a week. I'm like, oh, absolutely not. Like, no. I don't have time, first of all. But secondly, like it really bothers me that people assume as a salesperson. So with 30 years of sales experience, tell me, like, what's your recommendation for people if they are going to use LinkedIn for sales?
Be you. Be yourself. Like, I would encourage everybody to go to my LinkedIn account and look at what I write. I post once a week. By the way, I don't spend, you know, days, weeks, hours on end on LinkedIn. I post once a week on Mondays. I do go there on a regular basis to see what other people are talking about. And I comment with intentionality, meaning I don't just read a post and be like, great job, thumbs up. I read the post and I comment on the post. And sometimes that means I comment on one post in a week. And sometimes that means I comment on one post per day. And I'm okay with that. I don't need to spend my entire day on LinkedIn. And so I say that because the more genuine you are, the more apt you are to attract the kind of person you want to work with. Plain and simple, right? Because people can cut through the BS. People can see through the BS. And so if you open up with like an alarm emoji and seven ways to hack your way to success with an alarm emoji following that, I'm scrolling right past you. I'm done. I'm not interested. Don't care what you have to sell, because I don't find that that's going to be genuine. But if I come across a post that reads genuine, such as, I had this failure, now I'm interested, because you're being vulnerable, you're being open, and you're being honest with what has transpired in your daily business life. And I'm interested because I'm going to learn something as well. People see that, right? And they start connecting the dots and they come check you out. And that to me is how you should leverage LinkedIn. But I would say this is how you should leverage all of the social media platforms, right? We have a rule, quote unquote rule in our company, comment with intentionality. Otherwise, you could just hit the heart a bunch of times and move on. And that's a waste of time in my opinion. And so I think if you are able to comment with intentionality, you will see the information again coming back at you. People wanting to work with you and connect with you. Just earlier or late last week, I should say, I got an email that said, Jason, please meet X. X, please meet Jason. Jason is one of the greatest connectors I've ever met, and all these other things. And I was beaming with pride, right? It wasn't Jason is a great salesperson and Jason is the best marketer and Jason has the best ideas. It was, he's a great connector. If you need something, ask him for it. He probably has somebody in his network he can connect you to. That was everything for me, because again, it's the patient game. This person connect to this person, this person connect to this person. Before you know it, I'm talking to somebody in the UK about being an advertiser on one of our podcasts.
That's awesome. I love how patient you are. I'm not going to lie, I'm not as patient as you. I want people to be patient, though. I'm so impatient that I literally set like alarms all day long so that I move from task to task so that I don't spend too much time on one thing. I'll have to set an alarm and do some LinkedIn answering, I guess, because I do put just the hearts, you know.
Can I ask you, when I say the word perspective, what comes to mind for you?
The ability to look at things from different angles.
And so that takes time, right? If you look at it from all these different angles and you start thinking to yourself, well, at angle A, it looks like this. And at angle B, it looks like this. You're taking the time to evaluate that process. And before you know it, you've developed your own process, but it has taken time. And so then you can start to gain perspective on what it's like to be patient and say to yourself, okay, I thought this was going to be something that only took me an hour. It wound up taking me 10 hours, but in the perspective of a year, 10 hours is not even half a day. And I have 730 half days in a year, right? Once you start looking at things in a different light and a different perspective, you can learn patience. That's one of the things that I have found over the course of my time, especially in starting a business that's in the business of content creation, right? In order for me to reach 5 followers, 1,000 followers, 10,000 followers for our business, we had to start with one. And we couldn't get to 5 and all these other numbers unless we started with one. And then I started to see this on social media a lot, where people would be upset with themselves because, well, Haley put up a similar post to me and she got 100 likes and I got 20 likes. And it's like, but that's not a failure. You're building your way to 100. Not to mention, if I stood on stage and gave a TED talk to a room of 1,000 people and 20 people came up to me after that TED talk and said how inspirational it was and how motivational it was and can they get my business card, I would think I was king of the world, right? I wouldn't even care that Haley had 100 likes on her post anymore. And so if we can put things in perspective a little bit more, then we can learn the patience that it takes to grow a business and have a successful business for the long term, as opposed to a fly-by-night, flash-in-the-pan type of business.
I love that. And I think that that from a health journey perspective is true as well, because I'm also one of those impatient people in health journey. So I'm, you know, all in, go crazy, lose 45 pounds in, you know, 8 months, and then do my thing and then gain 30 pounds the next 8 months because I didn't do it right. I did it like, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it. And so I really, really like this conversation.
I want to add this for your audience too. By the way, not every day is unicorns and rainbows for me. Like, there are a lot of sleepless nights. There are a lot of things that I worry about, a lot of things that need to get done yesterday that I didn't take care of. And that happens. That's part of running a business. That's part of being a human being. You meant to do a task, but you couldn't get to it because another task took 2 hours longer than you expected it to. And that's all okay. Like, that literally is okay. I try to keep to my rules, which are, if you email me, I've got 48 hours to get back to you. If you text me, I've got 24 hours to get back to you. And if you actually call me, I am answering the phone. And so if you want to get something from me and you need it right away, call me. I will pick up the phone and I will answer it, or I will return your call within moments. But that also allows me to space my day and figure out where things fall on the task list. But again, things do fall through the cracks. Life is not unicorns and rainbows for me, despite the opportunity to build in perspective and build in these guidelines for how often it's going to take me to respond to an email or a text message type of thing. I still get stressed out. It happens. There are still days where I slam the laptop shut and I'm like, I'm done. I'm going. I'm leaving. I'll come back to this later on. Like, that still happens. But I find that I have a little bit more of a healthy relationship with my company than I would if I was just attacking everything at 100%, 100% of the time.
So social media is a big part of your business, I assume. How the heck do you stay up to date on, like, what's working? Or do you just keep the same strategy of, you know, quality, quality, quality? Like, what is your strategy for staying up to date with all of the different algorithms and platforms? And
we do our best to ignore social media and get people to our website. If the algorithm decides to put a semicolon in instead of a comma, or a period instead of an apostrophe or a dash, you might lose all of your audience. If you can get people to your website, and if you can get people to subscribe to your newsletter, you're winning the game. Because the person who subscribes to your newsletter has raised their hand and has said, I am interested in what you are selling. Tell me more. As opposed to being on social media and they're tapping the like button, like you said earlier, on LinkedIn and moving on, right? It's not to say that you should ignore it, because you should be there. It's a part of the process for us to drive traffic to our website and to our newsletter, which is what we use it for. And so we post the things that we see that are working. We read the articles that come in. We're not obsessive. We're not, you know, subscribing to Wired notifications. We do the things that we enjoy doing that our audience resonate with. And once we see that being successful, we will run with that success until it flames out, and then test something else out. Failure isn't terminal. It's a building block to success. And that comes with testing things out. Some days we're like, we've got a home run on this post, and we put it out there and it just crashes hard. And we're like, well, that sucked. Like, what happened there? Okay, let's try it a different way. And so we just keep testing different things out and going different directions. What we don't do, though, is we don't chase the viral trend, because the viral trend will be gone before you've even gotten that post up. And with a three-man operation, we can't possibly be in on all of the viral trends that are going to take place. So we do the things that resonate with us, that make us smile and laugh, that our audience is appreciative of, and more important, than actually comments back to us. Our whole goal is to get engagement. And so if people are commenting back to us, then we know we've got something on our hands, and we're going to use that on a repeated basis.
I think that's all the questions I had. I have loved this conversation. Just like the patience thing, the perspectives thing, really, really good information. Okay, so how can people find you? I'm definitely going to be following you, because I love endurance. I'm built for endurance sports. So I will be following, and I want to hear about the person who came in last. I do.
If nothing, we are consistent. At RunTriMag, RunTriMag. That is our website, you know, so runtrimag.com. Go to any major social media platform, search for RunTriMag, and you will find us. That is the easiest way to find the stories that we're telling. That is the easiest way to get inspired and motivated by everyday athletes doing extraordinary things, not only in the world of endurance sports, but also in their lives. So yeah, that's it. Go check out those stories. And then after you've read a story or two, get in touch with us so we can share your story.
Before we go, what's your next sporting event endurance. What's your plan? What's your next one?
Yeah. So in October, as a company, we're going to be racing the Javelina 100 in Phoenix, Arizona. It's a 100-mile trail run in the McDowell Mountains, super popular in the ultra trail running scene. And our three business partners will be taking on that challenge as sort of a company event.
Oh, love. That's awesome. Okay. Well, good luck with that challenge. And thank you so much for joining me on Daring Dreams.